Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, healthcare systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on the digital tools, solutions, strategies, and processes that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information and have fun along the way. And now, here are your hosts, Reed Smith and Chris Boyer.
Quick plug here for our friends over at Loyal. Healthcare is complicated, and our friends over at Loyal get that, which is why they are dedicated to helping health systems simplify the complexities through smart, consumer-first technology solutions designed to inspire loyalty.
Whatever your business goals, Loyal's platform enables you to empower, guide, and connect with your data in order to deliver a simply smarter digital patient experience. All you need to do is go over to their website, loyalhealth.com/demo, to schedule a personal demo and learn a little bit more about their products.
All right, welcome to another episode of Touchpoint. I'm Reed Smith, joined as always by Chris Boyer.
Hey, Reed. Nice to see you across the table there.
That's right. Across the table, we've got several other people that we'll introduce here in just one second, but this is episode number 89.
That's right.
And probably our fourth, fifth, sixth, I guess, that we've done, I don't know, in person?
In person, at a conference.
Yeah. So we are at the Atlas Conference, atlasconference.com, that you've heard us mention the last few weeks leading up, and we are in Boston, Massachusetts at the Renaissance Waterfront Hotel. Beautiful, beautiful place, beautiful city.
And warm.
And So at the Atlas Conference, brought to you by Kairos, and so we appreciate them allowing us to do this, and hopefully going to get some good content, which we'll jump into for a minute. But we've got three additional guests with us today. And I'm going to let them kind of all introduce themselves. So, Jen, I'm going to start with you as I point to my right for all listeners.
Thank you. So, my name is Jen Melby. I'm the Director of Patient Experience at Piedmont Healthcare, which is an 11 hospital system in Georgia.
My name is Chi Wong. I'm a physician executive at Wake Forest Baptist Health Center in Winston-Salem. And I lead the general medicine and hospital medicine services.
Awesome. And my name is Chris Gervais. I'm the head of product development at Kairos. So our teams work with our customers to come up with products, build them, and get them out to the world.
Awesome. Lots of different perspectives today as we delve into our conversation. So it's going to be fun to get all of your unique viewpoints about what we're talking about today. And Reed, what are we talking about today?
No, so the conference theme is systemness.
Oh, boy.
Systemness, which I didn't realize was a word. But it is. It'll give you the little red line, but you just have to ignore it when you type it into something.
That's right.
But anyway, systemness. So, you know, I have maybe some preconceived notions of what that is, but maybe we could take a minute and maybe discuss a little bit about really what does that mean, especially in the context of the conference.
Mm-hmm. Great. Sure. So, you know, I think about systemness in a few ways. And, you know, I've spent time in a large healthcare system. So I was here in Boston at Partners Healthcare for a long time, helping to build technology and clinical systems. And, you know, so much of what's happening in healthcare now is around the unbundling of healthcare, right? The surface area of healthcare is expanding like rapidly through all these different entry points. And so much effort has gone into having systemness of the clinical view of the patient, trying to have their medical record in one place and their labs and all these other things that's available. But now building on top of that, I think systemness is now starting to mean with all of the different care options, entry points, how can we provide really wraparound levels of service for patients and meet them where they are, not just where we need to be and not just where health systems have been. And so, you know, I think systemness is not just like acting and looking the same. It's actually the freedom to innovate on top of these really solid foundations that health systems have been trying to build for years. And now we can kind of pop them above the clouds to get them to patients in ways that they can have.
Mm. Like it.
Yeah.
You know, systemness to me is there's different pockets of systemness around the country. And I think that I've noticed that, you know, being in Boston area for about 20 years and now being transplanted to North Carolina. I think that I agree with what you're saying as far as systemness used to be physician healthcare centric. Mm-hmm. And I think the needle is now changing to what really should be. It should be patient family centric. And how to get there, I think all of us are trying to figure it out and do it the right way.
Interesting.
No, I agree with both of your comments. And coming from a patient experience perspective, really starting to kind of think about it from the patient's perspective of, you know, all of our health systems keep on growing. I mean, Piedmont has doubled in size in the last 2 to 3 years. So it's hard to create an integrated experience and feeling across all of that, but it's more critical because that's what patients are looking for. They're not looking for just, you know, that being treated as a patient. They're looking to be treated as a consumer, even when they're sitting in their own home or in their office building. So systemness, I think, is really thinking outside of our own walls, thinking about what it is to be a healthcare provider and partner for them in their day-to-day lives.
Now, I like what you're saying. To me, I think that I even want to take it even a step higher, right? It's not just the patient or the consumer. It's the different audiences that we serve, because we don't only just serve, right?
Exactly.
Our patients and consumers, that's a big part of what we do, and clearly the most important part of what we do, but then we have the other audiences, like the physician audience, right? And even like stakeholders, our own employees of the organization, how do we incorporate them into that? And so maybe I'm thinking too pie in the sky here.
I mean, no, but I think it's great. I mean, I think part of it is, right, we have to open our aperture and think about all these different personas in new ways. You know, I'm in the sandwich generation right now, right? I've got parents that I'm helping to try and take care of, and I've got kids that I'm helping to try and take care of. And yet, you know, me and my wife work full time, right? And so trying to cut through the barriers of just even like coordinating care across multiple types of services that people need, it's still hard, right? It's still, so it's not necessarily just about patients as well, but the people who are helping patients navigate and coordinate their lives as, you know, we're all living longer, dealing with chronic illnesses for longer, right? Needing more specialty care, trying to have an affinity to maybe your primary care, but then also have some affinity specialists that you know are going to help you navigate through these, you know, through either stressful times or also you know, times of where maybe things are managed okay, but you still need that periodic maintenance and things that can help you move in the right direction.
Well, I think the word caregiver has changed, right? So we use it when somebody said caregiver, it was like, oh, who's your physician?
Right.
Or it could be a care, then it was kind of care team, and we took into account nurse and maybe physical medicine, but still within the walls of this hospital. And so now, like what you're saying, we've got to take into account all these other people that are influencing those care decisions and even the day-to-day care of these patients.
And how can you make, I think, as you think about the changing nature of coordination of care, right, care coordinators, is one dream that folks have had is how do you create this, you know, especially for folks dealing with more serious issues, itineraries of care that can survive, right, and be leveraged across through systemness, because everyone's got visibility, the right people are involved, and it's not just the records following, but all the other access components are there.
And one of the key examples for me when I is spending time with my daughters is, you know, my 12-year-old orders pizza on the app. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, Dad, why is this not occurring to healthcare? And she's completely right,
right?
You know, we have, as we all know, we have an interoperability challenge. FHIR may or may not help us. Blockchain may kind of skip us and go directly to the consumer. And I think that this is an exciting time to like figure it out. But the question is, Dad, how come I can order pizza, but I can't get an appointment or X, Y, and Z for what's the most important? Our healthcare, in many respects.
Do you think that's true, Jen, in what you're seeing at Piedmont? And I know you're very much focused on the consumer. Reed and I have talked a lot about, like, does the consumer expect the same level of care as they would, like, if they ordered a pizza or if they were on Amazon? Is that what you see from your experience?
I think it depends. And I think it depends on where they are. So definitely we're seeing more of that for like low acuity services. I have a cold right now. I expect to be able to save my spot at my urgent care before I go, so I don't go there and end up sitting in the waiting room for an hour and a half. Getting sicker and sicker as we're all sitting there coughing at each other. But I think there's different levels of expectation for your super specialist, and that I want a recommendation for my family members and my friends who have also gone to them, and my doctor. I really trust who my doctor's recommending. To your point of they're more stakeholders for us than just the patient. We have a 2,000 member physician network, and not all of them are employed, so they have choices of where they can send their their patients. So our stakeholders are bigger, and they have a lot of things that are on their minds beyond just the consumer ease of access piece of it. So I think that complicates it more. It's not like ordering a pizza. I think there's a lot of other things that are going into the problem that we all have in healthcare.
Right, right. And, you know, as we see, like, over the we spend, it's great that we're talking about consumerism, I think, finally, right?
Or again. Or like, we're actually talking about it yet again, because we keep expecting it to happen.
Right.
Right?
Right. But, I mean, is that, is what is, maybe that's a different topic, but, I mean, to us, consumerism, is that defined the same within a health system? Or, you know, when you talk about that, you know, to my point, I'm referring back to me now. The pizza example may or may not be accurate. What are some of the drivers of consumerism over the last 10 years that we started to notice in our space?
When we kind of think about consumerism, we usually think about it in three different channels. So, like, access, choice, and experience. So access, just what are my options? What are my opportunities here? So I can go to a physician office. We also said, well, we need urgent care or quick care locations to give people other choices, or virtual visits for those people who are more on that leading edge and are comfortable having a video visit. But that's not everybody. So it's really about how do you make sure you're expanding your options and opportunities for those people, because you're going to have people on every level of the spectrum of what they are expecting out of their healthcare partner. And some people are going to be ready to do a virtual visit and others aren't, but we still need to make it easier for them to get in. So, like, we've partnered with Kairos to help facilitate online scheduling, because most of the people aren't going to be just looking to schedule an appointment between 8 and 5 on Monday through Friday. And then it goes into experience of how do we make sure whether or not they're scheduling online, or if they're calling somebody or having a face-to-face interaction, that it is at that high level of expectation that we want, that it's a high quality no matter what entry point that they're coming into.
You know, from the consumer perspective, I think that I agree with the example of the urgent care versus the subspecialist. I mean, I think those are two different needs, right? And I think that for the urgent care, you may not, as a consumer or as a patient, be as concerned about X, Y, and Z. But if you need a subspecialist for a major surgery, that's something that you may think a little bit more about. And so I got a call last week from a friend of mine in California, and I spent about an hour and a half and looking through different contexts of person X, Y, and Z. That was an hour and a half of my time, which I graciously gave. But, you know, the question is, why can't everyone else have this information? It's like, this is a good surgeon. They have high quality. They have low complication rates, X, Y, and Z.
Right.
It's not available.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not available. And that's unfair. And I think that technology is going to help us change that sooner rather than later.
We'll be out of a job, though, if we put all that stuff, you know, in technology, right?
Well, we could just do another podcast.
It's a great point, because I think about there's, you know, expectations for ease of access, transparency, and choice, right? And so each one of those needs a whole bunch of data to be able to be leveraged, because those are just like table stakes needs, right? Now I want to be able to use that to help me find the right route, right? Based on appropriateness or acuity or my availability or the provider's availability or my location or the fact that I don't own a car and I need transportation to get there. Like, there are all these different things that I think, you know, from a consumer perspective, that, you know, to the point of like ordering pizza, which is very much like this transactional thing. I don't think our goal is to make the interaction with healthcare like that transactional, right? Is because we're still, and I do bristle a bit when people like, oh, like, when I tell them what we do, they're like, oh, so it's like Open Table. And I'm like, yeah, except this is like, someone's dealing with a pretty significant thing here. Even if they, right? So it's like, they're not just trying to find a seat at a restaurant, and not that, you know, that takes a lot of effort too, but how do we continue to do it and provide like the humanity, the part that, you know, we need to be able to accentuate in healthcare and create the experience that can be digitized, but also can be very meaningful and provide that wraparound care and experience for folks. Because I do think that if we just think purely about how do we make the transactions easier, like we're totally missing the point, right? And I don't know if we're really doing anybody that much of a favor.
Hey, we want to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors, and that's our good friends at Binary Fountain.
You know, as a healthcare marketer, it's probably pretty obvious these days how much time you're spending on reviews, ratings relative to hospitals, physicians, all that kind of good stuff. You know, too many of those are going unanswered, and they're certainly not being analyzed.
This could be costing us new and current customers. It could be impacting our patient experience scores and potentially impacting our revenue. Luckily, our good friends at Binary Fountain have an online reputation management platform called Binary Health Analytics.
If you'd like to learn more or even schedule a demo, visit them online at binaryfountain.com. That's binaryfountain.com.
Well, I think that leads to, you know, the next point we should talk about is like technology, right? Mm-hmm. I think we're at these conferences, this one, there's a number of others, and we often kind of delve into technology as being our solution. But to your point that you just mentioned, Chris, you know, about how we need to bring humanity through, I like to think, even though I'm a technologist, you know, I love technology, don't get me wrong, but technology should be hidden to the users, right? So tell us your thoughts about, you know, technology and the role technology has played in today's, you know, healthcare systems.
So, you know, I've been part of a few rollouts and a part of many mergers. Uh-huh. And so battle scars and all. I do believe that a bigger system allows the patient to be at the right place, the right time, with the right person. Mm-hmm. I agree with that concept. I think the challenge with technology is the right hand often does not talk with the left hand. Mm. And this is the whole notion of interoperability. Sure, the data's there, but you know, just last week I had to click 5 buttons within my system to find out the results of an echo. Mm. You know, and if someone does not want to make those extra clicks, they're going to order another echo cardiogram that patient probably doesn't need, and we probably don't need to use that money. Mm-hmm. And so I think technology is good as long as we understand what is interoperability, how can we make it better from the provider side, but also, you know, be able to give the patient the right care at the right time. Mm. And so I think when we talk about systems, I don't think all of the systems are there yet, and I think we need to acknowledge that there's many more improvements that need to be made. Hmm.
Or maybe ones we should just wait on altogether.
Yeah.
Because you run into this shiny object syndrome, which is that drives this interoperability problem. It's like, ooh, that's cool. And so then somebody in the organization runs out and buys this thing that no one else knew about, right? And then Chris and I were having this conversation earlier, but then they show back up and go, oh, hey, so I bought this thing, and I need you guys to, like, turn it on. You know, everybody's like, wait, what is this? And that's how we end up down this path, right, of all this siloed technology. Yeah. And there's no – I'm worried a little bit about the motivation of interoperability. So what's in it for, you know, Epic, Cerner, whoever, you know, pick somebody. Like, what's in it for them? Mm. Why do they want to integrate? I don't know.
Yeah. I can't speak for them. I do think, though, so back to the, you know, I'll interrupt, but I think back to the core question of like the technology and humanity, I do think the point of what we're trying to do is to have the technology melt away, right? You don't want that to be in front of everyone's face and make them kind of deal with it. We're still struggling with that. I think healthcare has not emphasize design, and I don't mean how things look, but how they actually work, and thinking truly about user experience in the way that other industries have. And because, you know, a couple reasons, you know, everyone's always very concerned about compliance and security and privacy, sure. Right? There's that. There's also just the national or the invested interests that of inertia of powerful, you know, groups within health systems of physicians or specialists and other things that, you know, kind of want things run their way. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, part of what we need to do with technology to the point of, you know, driving interoperability is not driving interoperability for the sake of interoperability, right? Just be able to move data back and forth. This is not the problem at all, right? We have many ways of moving data back and forth. Mm-hmm. We're still struggling to provide the level of meaning on that data that allows multiple parties to interact with it easily, right? So there's tons of, I got tons of lab results and other things about my data. It's very hard for me as a consumer to understand what I do with it, but it shows up in like 5 different apps.
Right.
So it's not about moving it around. It's now about, you know, how, again, can we incorporate that data into the patient's life, give them the ability then to have knowledge to take action and make decisions better. That will be, to me, like where the technology really makes a difference. Not that we can just pass data back and forth and make it work. And I think every kind of system vendor in the healthcare space is committing to some form of interoperability, be it baseline, like, oh, sure, we'll send an HL7 message, or right, awesome, we'll do FHIR and actually start to get to a more higher order programmable healthcare API, which would be wonderful. Right. But that's still just, you know, that's just still baby steps.
Yeah.
So how are they making meaningful use, right?
Right, right.
For the health system and the consumer, making meaningful use meaningful.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to put it.
You know, Jen, Matt, who works with you, Matt Gov, our good friend of the podcast, he said to me once in an interview that we had with him on the show that healthcare or health systems are data rich but information poor, right?
Yes.
So, like, what are some ways at Piedmont that you're trying to make that information a little bit more actionable or meaningful, right? The meaningful use piece. Are there some things that you're doing on your end?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to respond to the earlier comment, like, I think a lot of health systems get in the problem of having the technology be the strategy.
Yeah.
And that's something that we're very cognizant of and trying to avoid. The strategy needs to be meeting the patient where they are, transforming by making their experience hassle-free and creating a bonded relationship with them so we can actually get to higher level things like population health and really providing value back to the patients, the payers, the employers. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you just buy a big piece of technology and you implement it without actually tying it to the strategic objectives that you're trying to achieve. And we've had that happen and now we're trying to clean it up. And it's a much more difficult thing to clean up a bad implementation. Mm-hmm. But to your now current question around what do you do with all of this data and how do you actually make it actionable? My department was formed about 2 years ago, really trying to go above and beyond implementing a technology for technology's sake or just providing customer service in the way that we've always done it and really looking outside at other industries of how they personalize the experience, like checking into the hotel that we just checked into last night. I mean, they already know you. They know your profile before you even stand there in front of them. We have all of that information about our patients, and we're not doing anything with it. Every time you interact with us, it's like a brand new time that we've ever
here's
we've
another clipboard.
Yeah, and here's the stack of 5 pieces of paper that you need to fill out. Mm-hmm. Never mind that you've already actually filled that out when you scheduled your appointment and pre-regged with us. And then that's the type of thing that we're trying to work through of just making it less cumbersome because we should be doing it. And that's where I think we're behind. Mm-hmm.
So along those lines, is there or what is the difference between what you would consider patient focused and patient centric? Is that the same thing or no? Because I hear both terms and I'm not entirely sure they mean the same thing.
Right.
Patient focus seems like we're focusing on patients. Patient centric means maybe we're taking them more into account or allowing them to be part of the process.
Right.
I don't know. Is that fair? I mean, are we doing that? No.
Well, Chris, you mentioned design, right? We need to design the experience around that audience, around that patient. Is that what that means, patient centric then?
I think so. I mean, maybe one's a philosophy, one's more like what happens episodically. I'm not kind of sure, right? Like, you know, we can be patient-centric. I think it's either identifying like who's your primary persona or who's your fiduciary as you're thinking about, you know, engaging things. I don't know. I don't know if you could find, honestly, like, and certainly not in the folks that I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with through Kairos, that nobody, like, everyone's patient-centric, right? That they have to be, right? I think it's just all, again, what's within their ability to manifest that in ways that say, if you're really patient-centric, then I can show you and live the engagement strategy for you and how we're gonna move you through our system, how we're gonna help you navigate, how we're gonna facilitate what you need. And I think patient-centric to me has to go now beyond when patients interact with you, to Jen's point, into like they're, you know, hopefully around their whole life, even when they don't need you, right? So when things might be quiet, there's still an opportunity there to ensure that they're coming to see, they're getting that test, they're, you know, doing the things annually that they should be doing, just a, you know, more gentle and more fitting into your life. And I think that's a big part to me of the design part and being patient-centric is, again, meeting me in my terms and fit into my life because my life's busy. And don't make me like step out of my modality into yours, but meet me where I am. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little cautious about using the word patient-focused and patient-centric because I think it's been used so many times in so many different ways that people don't really understand what the meaning is, and maybe I don't understand what the meaning is. You know, and sometimes, you know, I see physician leaders or physicians and others rolling their eyes when someone says patient-focused, right? Because it can be used in a pejorative manner. And so I tend to try to flip the conversation of saying, what would I do if this was my mother, right? And I love my mother, right? So what am I gonna do for my mother? And how do we deliver what we want for my mother? And then all the conversations and the tension kind of goes down. It's like, okay, then it should take one click or it should take one phone call. They know what my insurance is. They don't have to ask me for my date of birth. They know what my code status is. I can move forward. And so that's how I define, you know, those kind of buzzwords. Mm-hmm.
No, I think that's great. I'm glad you like your mother. I'm sure what
that's saying. I love my mother.
Is that going to be good? Yeah, sometimes that's not a good thing.
No, that's good. I don't know. Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, I agree with it. I think I agree that the terms patient-centric and patient-focused are overused and kind of meaningless now because we're all in healthcare. We should all be patient-centric.
Exactly.
And that should be at the core of, you know, why we come to work every day and why we exist. I think now we're in the challenge of being like in the minds of our patients and not thinking about them as patients, but thinking about them as your neighbor, just your community, everybody around you, and how they're interacting in their day to day and how we can be that trusted partner. Like, it's habit that we all go to Amazon now every time we need to reorder detergent. So, like, how do we make ourselves habit because we're that easy and we're that trusted because we deliver a consistent quality product, which all comes out of our clinical expertise. Mm-hmm. So it should just be kind of part of our mantra now.
And doesn't it also just get to, like, the changing, how do you change what patient engagement is? Because I think still so many people think engagement with healthcare means something bad has happened, right? Like, I have to go get something fixed, or I have to go, like, they're going to tell me something bad versus, you know, this is just, it's part of my life. I need to engage with my own wellness. And, you know, there's been so much activity in the wellness space and preventative care or, you know, preventative maintenance. And just how do you continue to change that mindset?
Well, and it's funny you mentioned Amazon, right, as like an example there, because Amazon, I don't go to Amazon anymore. Amazon comes to me. I have Alexa in my. I always make a point to say Alexa so people's devices at home listening in will turn on. But I have the Alexa device, and the other day I got the notification. It says you need to do your refill for your over the counter vitamin. Should I place that on your order and send it along your way? I didn't even have to like prompt it anymore. Now, to me, at first I was creeped out by it. Right? But then I thought, hey, that's very convenient because I was running low on my vitamins and I was just thinking that morning. And then I thought, is Jeff Bezos now in my head? I mean, I don't know. But I mean, is that what kind of what consumers are expecting nowadays? Is that like the new consumer expectation?
And is it based on the acuity?
Yeah.
Right? Because again, that's great for vitamins.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. How does that fit into the overall scheme?
You know, I'm fascinated. This may be a little tangential, so I apologize. I'm fascinated by wearables. And there's more and more wearables on people, right? And with blockchain technology, will blockchain skip us, go directly to the consumer and say, hey, your blood glucose is X, Y, and Z. Let me make an appointment with the endocrinologist because of why would you like that? I mean, that's kind of the jump that may or may not occur within the next X number of years. I don't know how other people
I would happen to like that because I'm a type 1 diabetic. Okay. So that's cool. Yeah. So you hit a good point there. But
so to, you know, maybe combine those, the one of the power of Amazon is that it's the store of everything, right? But in healthcare, there's no one store of everything. So I can't just have my Alexa prompt me for, oh, by the way, you know, we know you had a 30-day prescription. You're now on day 25. Would you like me to reorder that? Because that's someone else's thing, right? Or, by the way, you're supposed to see a PT every 2 weeks. I noticed on your calendar you didn't schedule one. Could I book one for you? But that's someone else, right? You're not going back to the same sort of store in a way to get everything. But how can, if we start to be able to have more of a way, again, just truly beyond interoperability, but able to securely publish this, these data and these interactions, where you can have a, you know, multiple marketplace that can leverage them and it's authenticated and true, can you start to unify that behind a design and a user experience that is unified for the patient? So they can have the, you know, the magic answer machine that lets you do that type of stuff.
I want a magic answer machine.
I know.
You're probably unique, because I think it depends on acuity and demographics a bit, because I think about my parents. They're never going to be comfortable. They don't wear wearables. They're never going to be comfortable with that creepiness factor. But what they are so frustrated about is the challenges of even getting on the phone with a with somebody and the right person, and then getting from one physician office to the next, to the next, to the lab, to the hospital. It's that massive coordination that we have data and we have the systems and the interoperability to fix that, but we just do a really bad job of it. So like, let alone the fancy stuff that we're talking about of having the Amazon-like experience of knowing that you're out of a prescription before you even know it. There's some basic things that we are not leveraging our tools and technology and systemness for, that are meeting the bulk of our patients that were, they're actively patients of ours in our hospitals in that demographic.
Do you think it's lack of will or lack of incentive?
Probably a little bit of both. It's connected. I mean, it's difficult and it's risky to kind of upturn a lot of the processes that we've had in place for decades.
You know, what I think it's fascinating just on both parts is that healthcare is so behind. You know, I think the aeronautics, the airplane industry kind of taught us, you know, you can have a complicated system and not have plane crashes, right? And I think that we've learned that from healthcare. It's like, hey, we can do better in air. And I think the banking industry, you know, when they said we're taking the middle person out with this type of blockchain technology, we're going to skip the middle person and go directly to either the wearables or the non-wearables, and you'll have that information. You can do what you want with that information and say X, Y, and Z. And so I'm excited of the future. I'm also nervous, but I think it's going to change whether we like it or not. And I think that we need to be ahead of it and leverage it.
So Jen, where do you think that we're going? Where is systemness going to take us?
I think systemness is going to take us, one, there's just more competition in the market. And I think that's a good thing because it pushes us all a little bit forward into thinking outside of the box and finally addressing those things that we've just stuffed down because we've had other priorities. So I think it's going to make everybody better, and it's going to bring the level of care and the level of convenience and the customer expectation up. But from sitting in a health system spot, I am a little nervous that it won't be us that's doing it. And it'll be somebody from the outside that'll have figured it out faster.
What are your thoughts, Chris?
You know, I guess just to echo a little bit what Jen said, I do think the notion of if systemness can move us beyond just thinking about interoperability and into value and continuity, I think we're able to actually not just respond to the demands of change, but also start to actually see around some corners and push the market the way we want to. And to Jen's point around, look, it echoes what Terry said this morning, disrupt or be disrupted. If there's not bravery, will, and incentive to kind of take it on internally, you will be on the other side of the change, looking at it going, I wish we had done that. And whether, you know, no one's going to call it systemness, it's going to be called business as usual. This is how we operate now. And just a new level of expectation.
Hey, Chris, before we go too much further, jump into this next segment of the podcast, I did want to mention and thank one of our sponsors, Influence Health. You know, they've got a consumer experience platform that covers several things. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we've talked about content management systems on this podcast.
Yeah, we did.
What about CRMs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we covered CRMs for sure.
And then obviously each and every week we talk about digital marketing. So digital marketing systems, in one way, shape, or form have probably been covered, right?
That's right. Digital marketing systems. And I would say that we even talk about it in a way of that overall digital consumer experience.
Well, there you go. I would recommend for anybody interested in one of those topics or anything else, they've also got some complimentary solutions on their website. But head over to their website, take a look at what they've got and what they're offering relative to CMS, CRM, digital marketing systems, kind of how all that is woven together in what they call their consumer experience platform. Find your way over to influencehealth.com.
Touch counterpoint. There are two sides to every story. Ready, fight!
All right, now we're pivoting to the touch counterpoint part of our segment. And this is gonna be interesting because I have a feeling we might even have a five-way disagreement. So this is touch point, touch counterpoint, touch counter counterpoint, whatever. Okay, so we've been talking about systemness and possibly the change in the definition of systemness. But really, if you think about it today, as is wont in our industry, oftentimes, this disruption occurs from a particular segment within the industry or even within the health system. So the question on the table today is, who should drive systemness, or who's going to take the reins and lead us through to systemness? Who has an opinion on that one?
Should be the hospital. Hospital should own the whole thing. Whole thing. Drive the whole thing, start to finish. They're the hub of the hub and spoke. So they need to drive this because they're going to be the ones that are having to pull all the different systems and technologies and people and motivations together. So they've got to own it.
So I agree that the health system should drive it, but I will say that this is my kind of viewpoint. Healthcare GDP is increasing. I think the tipping point is going to be 2021. It's going to go kaboom because our economy cannot continue to support the cost that we are having right now with healthcare. Number two, Blockbuster is no longer here. Borders bookstore is no longer here. And Sears looks like it's going into bankruptcy. And so the fear is, who's going to change it? I think it's going to be external forces of a few mergers that has happened over the last 4 months that's external from healthcare that's changing us and forcing us to get better, get faster. And those health systems decide, hey, we need to jump on that bandwagon now before 2021 will make us get to that systemness. We need to go from fee-for-service to value-based to population health. And whoever gets there the fastest, the best, will win.
Okay.
Do you agree?
I agree. And I'm honestly conflicted about this entire question. I don't want to answer.
You need to disguise your voice.
Because I agree with pieces and parts. And that I think the health system needs to be at the center of it. Because right now, we own the most pieces and parts of it. Mm. However, do I think that we're going to be able to leverage the amount of change at a global scale that it needs to? That's where I'm conflicted. I'm not sure that that's going to happen. And you look at the CVSs and the retail arenas around healthcare that have so much data about us, and as health systems are pushing patients out of our walls. You know, like we're actively trying to keep them out. Mm-hmm. And that's very different for us. Historically, we've been trying to pull them in, but now, you know, we're not getting reimbursed in the same way, and it's not an incentive for us to do that. So the incentive is to keep us out, but we're just not skilled on managing them outside of our walls. And so that's where I kind of agree in that I think it's going to be some external forces that are going to jump on the opportunity and come up with like a meaningful way to engage patients in their health care that aligns with their incentives.
So in external forces to you is like pharmacies, more the retail offerings?
Yeah,
is that what you meant as well?
Yeah, I didn't want to name the difference.
Yeah, well, we're not.
But yes, external, outside of our traditional healthcare industry.
What do you think?
Chris?
So I was struggling to come up with which of the known entities should do it, because I think it's actually not a known entity that is going to do it. I think it is a composite entity of that is there, and I think we have some examples, some prototypes that are going to drive it, right? Obviously, I think if I could, you know, have a magic wand, I would say, well, the patient should drive systemness. Like, they should demand it, right? But their needs are going to be manifested, I think, by entities outside of healthcare that will form new types of collaborations that are going to put pressure and drive it in non-traditional ways, because they're the ones who are going to figure out, and I hate to say it this way, how to monetize it the most effectively and drive the most ease of access of the surface area, because they will take on the hard work of gobbling up all this variation, putting a nice face on it, making it easy, not perfect, right, but making it a lot easier. And I think it will have the unfortunate effect of maybe pushing some parts of the traditional health system down the value chain further than they've ever been comfortable at being, because they don't know how to continue to move up.
Okay. Okay. So then you're thinking like a kumbaya of like the hospital with maybe the EMR system, that kind of consortium?
I think it'll be non-traditional players who are looking at the space, who frankly have a lot of capital, have a lot of will, know how to build things quickly, iterate fast, you know, and can exert pressure in a, you know, in a consumer-oriented way to help drive this, right? And my, you know, not fear, but it will be someone coming, it will be some entity coming from outside that is going to start putting pressure, and just reacting to it won't be enough.
So HIT companies then, is that?
Sure, companies today that all of a sudden they show up on your device and you go, huh, I never thought, why would they be getting, oh, now I understand why they're getting into healthcare.
Huh.
Right? Oh, now I understand why they want me to be have the hub of my record mobile, or why they're now letting me use voice in a whole bunch of new ways, right? Or why a non-traditional entity now all of a sudden becomes a pharmacy or becomes a care location that was never there. So
interesting. I think you guys all have interesting perspectives on this. I'm going to take a bleeding edge here. I think the payer is going to lead the way. That's where the money's at. If you think about the end of the day, how do we realize or actualize value-based purchasing? It's going to be how do we distribute that within our industry? So I suspect that maybe the payer is going to play a bigger role in this. Mm-hmm. They're already looking at consumerism in a way, where they're treating each other as members, maybe I'm being Pollyannish now, but still, I think that they're going to certainly be playing a role in this. So, at the end of the day, we got to get paid somehow, and that's who pays our bills right now. And one of those payers, by the way, is our government.
Right. You're wrong, but. All right, we're wrapping up this episode 89, talking about systemness here at Atlas in Boston, and want to thank our guests certainly for being here. But before we get out of here, maybe a few recommendations. Mm-hmm. So we will start opposite of introductions, and so Chris, I'll start. The other Chris, I'll start with you. what are you thinking?
So I have to say, you know, this summer I went... it's something I've never really done before. I went to Glacier National Park, and I can't sort of recommend highly enough, not just going to a national park, go and engage with one of those folks who lives and breathes and actually spends their life in the park, and get them to tell you a whole story about natural history that will make all the things you're dealing with, you know, we all have all these pressures in our life, that kind of melts away. And it was one of the most powerful things I've done in the last couple years, because I'm not a big hiker, I'm not a naturist, like I'm a tech guy, right? But I left my phone, we went out hiking, and I just like was a way to reconnect myself with my family. Mm-hmm. I can't recommend going out and taking advantage of our national park system more than anything, mm-hmm. just to put your headspace in a good place.
I like that.
That's a good
recommendation.
That's a great recommendation.
So healthcare is challenging. It's stressful, and I think there's a lot of churn and burn. And for me, what has been wonderful, similar to what you were saying, is to unplug. So I took my teenage, preteen daughters and my wife and I, we unplugged in Colorado for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. The first 2 days was a lot of eye rolling from my daughters, hard for me,
But by day 3 until day 14, it was the best experience that we had as a family, but also just being there, being together, and being present. Yeah. And the whole idea of being present and being mindful is something that I've need to teach myself over and over again. Mm-hmm.
Digital sabbatical.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I will follow the theme with digital sabbatical and travel. So I actually just got back from a trip to Jordan, and I could not recommend it enough. Just being in Boston today, we think this city is old. Every city that we went to and visited was formed in 2000 BC. So there's just so much history and culture, and the people were wonderful, and the food was great, and it was a wonderful trip, and I recommend it.
That's awesome.
Very cool. It's very cool.
All right, well, I'm going to do a throwback to something we talked about earlier in the episode, and I'm certainly not going the unplug, go out to nature, go traveling thing. We were talking about pizza delivery apps. One of my favorite food delivery apps is Grubhub. Mm. And so I'm going to recommend Grubhub as a place. I mean, you know, oftentimes if you're plugged in, you can't get out of it, you're at a meeting or whatever, you can just go on the Grubhub, type in wherever your local restaurant is, and have them deliver food to you. I live in metropolitan areas, so they can deliver food to us. Have it there, or in fact, as you're driving home, have it there by the time you get home. So no need to cook. So pizza delivery app in the form of Grubhub is what I'm recommending.
And you can order that food in Minnesota to me in North Carolina.
I can. Give your address.
There you go. I'm also going to do an app, and it's the MailChimp app, strangely enough. Maybe better than their actual website. So we send our weekly email out for Touchpoint, the TPS report. Anybody's an Office Space fan. But we send that out on MailChimp. Anyway, it will notify you of like, hey, here's the opportune time to resend to the people that didn't open and some of that kind of stuff. And it's actually a better experience just from a UI standpoint, I think, than of course, they've recently redone their website. So it's pretty nice as well. But anyway, really, really, I guess, useful app.
Very cool.
Very great utility.
That's awesome. And it was a nice plug for our insider email.
That's right.
Email.
That's
so right. You go to touchpoint.health/insider to sign up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So thanks for the support. Thanks for listening. Review, subscribe, rate, all that kind of good stuff wherever you get your podcast. Touchpoint.health is the website. And for Reed, Jen, Chi, Chris, and Chris, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.